Hello, friends. Welcome to another program of Two Guys with Heart, with Giff Briner and Dave Colonen. These two fine Christian gentlemen will do their very best to bring encouragement to your faith. We all undergo difficulties throughout our lifetime. How do we respond, and what is the correct direction that we should take? Giff and Dave will give it their best shot to guide our lives through the work and words of Jesus. And now, here they are, Two Guys with Heart.
Good afternoon, friends. Hey, it's Giff Briner here, another exciting program of Two Guys with Heart. We have a good one lined up for our listeners today, me and my good friend
Dave Colonen.
David, boy, the Christmas season is upon us. It's feeling good to be here. We've talked a great deal about the birth of Christ yesterday, and today, you know what I want to do, Dave? Let's turn the page over to Matthew again, but just the next page to see what happens to Jesus when he begins his ministry work. I think it's quite sensitive and appropriate that we talk about that during the Christmas season. It's all about John the Baptist. That's where I want to pick it up.
30 years later.
30 years later after the birth of Christ. Yep, but Jesus is about 30 now. And it's the time we look at John the Baptist and how he started this effort for Jesus. About the time that John the Baptist began preaching in the desert area of Judea, John said, "Change your hearts and lives because the kingdom of heaven is near." John the Baptist is the one in Isaiah the prophet was talking about when he said, "This is the voice of one who calls out in the desert, 'Prepare the way for the Lord, make the road straight for him.'" Remember reading that in Isaiah?
John's clothes. They talk about that first.
Yeah.
They were made from camel's hair, and he wore a leather belt around his waist. For food, he ate locusts and wild honey. Many people came from Jerusalem and Judea and all around the area of the Jordan River to hear John. John was the preacher before Jesus. He kind of prepared the way. Many of the Pharisees and the Sadducees came to the place where John was baptizing people. When John saw them, he said, "You are all snakes. Who warned you to run away from God, coming punishment? Do the things that show you really have changed your hearts and lives. And don't think you can say to yourselves, 'Abraham is our father.' I tell you that God could make children for Abraham from these rocks. The axe is not ready to cut down the tree, and every tree that does not produce good fruit will be cut down and thrown into the fire." He said, "I baptize you with water to show that your hearts and lives have changed. But there's one coming after me who is greater than I am, whose sandals I am not good enough to carry. He will baptize you with the Holy Spirit and fire." You know, in my lifetime, I've been privileged to go to the Holy Land 8 times.
That's incredible.
8 times. And I have gone to the Jordan River, and since I was a preacher, they made me baptize the people in the Jordan. They fixed it now. You know, how many years later? It's 40 years later. It isn't the same kind of a thing. They've really made a platform to get in. When we were there, I mean, you had to walk down and get in the water the best you could and stand there and baptize the people. And you know what happened? Every time we did that, I said to myself, "I am really privileged to be here. And I would be foolish not to get baptized in this Jordan River." And so I always asked the preacher who was with us. We always had preachers coming from everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I got baptized 8 times.
You did too.
And it was a special day, very special day.
It sure would be a special day, yes.
One day I got up in the Holy Land and we were going to the Jordan River. And I was going to baptize 80 people. And I said, this is going to be a big task today. And then I looked out the window, and it was snowing. Actually snowing in Israel. I didn't know they ever got snow, but they do once in a while. And so I said to myself, very, very good. Ah, Dave, you don't have to baptize anybody today. They'll cancel that service. Come on. You got out of it. And boy, I was just, I was running around like a, like so happy that I didn't have to go to the baptismal service. Well, all those people got together and they said, we paid thousands of dollars to get here, and we're getting baptized, and you're doing it.
They couldn't let you out of it, huh?
And, it
was snowing.
I still remember dunking people.
In cold water.
Oh, in my. A snowstorm.
Oh, my.
You don't forget those days.
No, you don't. No,
so
you don't.
So you talk about the Jordan River and Jesus being satisfied. If you've ever been to Israel, you know you're going to do that. You're going to spend thousands of dollars to get there.
Yeah.
And you're going to get baptized in that cold water.
My, Dave, do you baptize them one at a time?
One at a time.
80 people in ice cold water?
Yes. Yes. Why? It was freezing.
Now, each one of these people could get in, get back out, and dry themselves off. Now, wait, you're in the water the whole time.
They wanted to take pictures, bro. They did it right. This is my. I've spent the money to get in. We couldn't tell them, oh, they, you know, they, you didn't.
Yeah, you couldn't say
much.
No. Yeah,
no, yeah. You spent hundreds and thousands of dollars.
Oh, to get in.
You got to do to please them.
Yes. But you could have died. I mean, if you were in a cold
only
water.
One bad day in 8 years, well, that's not too bad, right? It's not too bad.
Yeah, that's a long, cold day for you, though.
Mm.
My, those have to be very emotional-filled experiences, though. Not only for you as the preacher, but those individuals that you were baptizing. Can you imagine the emotion that they had as they were going through these experiences, being baptized in the Jordan? I mean, for me personally, I don't know if I could have even gone under the water. I'd be crying so hard I couldn't breathe. You put me underwater, I drowned.
You're such a big guy. I didn't need three guys to pick you back up after I put you down.
That's about right. You couldn't do it alone. Well, I would imagine that would be a piece of the action. That would be a kind of a risky thing to get involved with. Particularly you as the pastor, did you have somebody else there that perhaps was very physical and would be able to assist you in the event you had some kind of an emergency there?
Well, I had the couriers, and I made them become a part.
Okay, they were right with you.
And we would sing everywhere we go in the Holy
Land. Sure,
we got no.
That's right.
That's how we got so many people to go 8 years in a row.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because we'd sing at every place, every special spot that the guide would take us, and they said, we're going to stop here for a few minutes. And they said, okay, it's time for the couriers to sing another song.
Yes.
And those are some special moments that...
they would be.
Are in your memory book.
Did you, three of you, sing while you were standing in the Jordan?
I couldn't tell you that for sure. Can't remember that. It's been a while. I'm trying to record now what I did
years ago. Yeah, I realize that. Yeah, I know. You have an incredible memory, but nobody can remember all the details. That was just a curiosity thing. But that really, really had to be quite an emotional thing for the men, the women, the children. I mean, everybody involved. To be baptized in the Jordan? My, oh, my, that would be quite an experience.
And you take the garden tomb. We had a communion service right there every time and sang special songs. We went out on the Sea of Galilee, stopped the boat, and had a concert. And those people demanded from us some really special moments. We would have been probably geared to say, hey, let's just go on. But when people ask for it,
you did it.
We decided to help them to make their experience so rich that they'd go home and talk about it.
Absolutely.
And everybody would want to go the next time.
All right. Well, let me read about it. We're talking about this baptism. Let me read what the Bible says about it. If I can read a couple of verses here. At that time, Jesus came from Galilee to the Jordan River and wanted John to baptize him. But John tried to stop him, saying, why do you come to me to be baptized? I need to be baptized by you. Jesus answered, let it be this way for now. We should do all things that are God's will. So John agreed to baptize Jesus. As soon as Jesus was baptized, he came up out of the water, and then heaven opened, and he saw God's Spirit coming down on him like a dove. And a voice from heaven said, "This is my son, whom I love, and I am very pleased with him." Those are powerful words, Dave. That means that John the Baptist now has completed the task. He has baptized Jesus. The skies opened up. The Spirit of God had come down like a dove, landed onto Jesus. And to me, that began his ministry right there.
Well, you must remember that after the baptismal service, Jesus left John the Baptist and went out into the wilderness for 40 days to be tempted by the devil. That's a very fascinating story.
Yes, it is.
And Jesus didn't start his ministry with a crowd. He started it for 40 days of fasting in the wilderness. He ate nothing for 40 days, 40 nights. He was very hungry. The devil came to Jesus to tempt him. And he said, "If you are the Son of God, tell these rocks to become bread." And Jesus answered, "It is written in the scriptures, a person does not live by eating only bread, but by everything God says." And then the devil led Jesus to the holy city of Jerusalem and put him on a high place of the temple. And the devil said, "If you are the Son of God, jump down now, because it's written in the scriptures, he has put his angels in charge of you. They will catch you in their hands, and that you will not hit your foot on a rock." You know what Jesus said to him?
What'd he say?
"You tell me."
Well, I have that scriptures here in front of me. It says, "He also said in the scriptures, do not test the Lord your God." Then the devil led Jesus to the top of the very high mountain and showed him all of the kingdom of the world and all of their splendor. The devil said, "If you will bow down and worship me, I will give you all of these things." Jesus said to the devil, "Go away from me, Satan. It is written in the scriptures, you must worship the Lord your God and serve only him." So the devil left Jesus, and the angel came back and took care of him.
You know, that's the New Testament.
Mm-hmm.
The Old Testament has something to say as well. You got to look very carefully at Psalm 34.
Oh, share that, please.
Psalm 34, "Children, come and listen to me. I will teach you to worship the Lord. You must do these things to enjoy life and have many happy days. You must not say evil things, and you must not tell lies. Stop doing evil and do good. Look for peace and work for it." There's about three or four sentences that are incredible for your family. If you're a mom listening to us today, two old guys with heart, you got to say, "Hey, you know, I need to look that up in Psalm 34, verse 11. And I got to give the Old Testament account of what we should do with our children and what they need to hear from God's word."
Wow, that's an incredible story. You know how we gather up these notes, and we have notes in the Bibles, and we have notes in books, and we have notes all over the place. There's a little insight story here that I'd like to share. I think it's appropriate at this time. Can I take a minute to read a story?
You bet.
About a guy and a shopkeeper in the borough. Well, he worked long. A guy worked long and hard hours, virtually nothing to show for all of his labors. Even his best efforts to beguile the Paris tax collector left him with very little for his family. His life was depressing and without purpose, until the day when a missionary entered his shop to make a purchase. Before leaving the shop, the foreigner shared his faith with this Frenchman, and for the first time the shopkeeper realized that there was more to life than he had ever exposed or supposed. As he grew in faith, the Frenchman became convinced that his lifestyle must be radically altered and that he could no longer lie about how much income he was making in his little shop. When the time came to submit his tax forms, he filled them out in full and paid the required amount of taxes. The local tax clerk was stunned. The word spread like wildfire among the shopkeepers. And this shopkeeper's wife was outraged, and his neighbors were convinced that he had lost his mind. When they inquired about his foolish actions, he could only explain that God had made a difference in this man. So, let's face it, whether you're a shopkeeper in Paris or whether you're a laborer in Carlisle, the Lord can speak to you and work to you in all kinds of ways. Change your life completely to the point where you're going to be extremely honest, even when it costs you additional dollars out of your pocket. So these great words of inspiration that come from the Bible haven't just influenced Dave and Giff, but it's every single one of our listeners and every single person who reads the Bible. So I would like to encourage you to do just that. Pick up the scriptures, open it up, and see what it has to offer you. This Christmas season should be a special time for you to do that without thinking about it. It should come as a natural thing. Pick up the scriptures, study it, read it, think about what it's saying to you, particularly during this Advent season. David, do you have anything else you'd like to offer in that arena of forgiveness and acceptance and changing your life?
What time we got? How much time we got?
Oh, we have a few minutes left. Okay. Yeah, we have 6-7 minutes.
Right after that, the whole thing changed.
Okay.
Jesus then began his ministry. After the 40 days tempted in the wilderness, then Jesus went to Galilee and said, okay, let's do what I came for. And he found some followers, he healed the people, he taught the people. No matter whether you look in Matthew or whether you look in the Old Testament, you'll be able to find yourself just fascinated with what the Bible starts at such a slow pace. But boy, does it unfold in a hurry. And if we just keep going like we're going, we're going to go through the Bible in a I don't know whether we're going to do that or not. We're attempting to do something today about that. We would be amazed at what kind of a book we pick up when we pick up the Bible. If you and your family could get interested and seeing it for yourself, when you can put the Bible in your own hand and you can turn the pages and say, look, this is where we're going next. Jesus began his ministry. He had gone through John the Baptist. He had now spent some time in the wilderness. Now he was coming to Galilee and to start his ministry. So
I think some of the impressive parts, David, is how this New Testament that we're reading merges so well with the Old Testament and the prophets and what they said was going to happen, how they said it was going to happen. There's so much of it, particularly through the book of Isaiah. Now, there's other parts too, but Isaiah was predicting the birth of Christ for a long time, and all of those predictions, every single one of them came to be. To me, that's extremely impressive. So if you and I kind of lead some of our listeners through that evolution of merging the New and the Old Testament, they find out how important it is and how real it all becomes. Sometimes we go forward on blind faith, but sometimes we have the absolute proof right at our fingertips, and that surrounds the birth of Christ. It is absolute proof. And I like how you said about Jesus beginning his work in Galilee.
Yeah, but he had to pick up 12 disciples.
Yeah.
So that's fitting right in with us. And
that's a good place for you to start. Hit that for me.
Jesus, he walked by the Sea of Galilee, and he saw two brothers. He saw Simon, called Peter, and his brother was called Andrew. And they were fishing. They were throwing a net into the water. That's how they made their living. Jesus said to them, famous words, huh? Come, follow me, and I will make you fishers for people. So Simon and Andrew immediately, not next week, not next year, they left their nets that day, and they followed him. It didn't take long to find two more men, and then finally they found 12. And wow, what a time they had. Jesus said, hey, we're finding guys. Let's keep walking around the whole Sea of Galilee. He saw two brothers, James and John, sons of Zebedee. And they were mending their nets with their dad, Zebedee. And Jesus told them to come with him. And immediately, that's a big word.
Yes.
Immediately, they left their boat and their father, and they followed Jesus. There was something fascinating about who Jesus was and why these men were so willing to throw it down the net and say, I'm going to follow this guy. This guy's got something to say. The crowds gathered.
Yes.
The disciples might have stood on the sidelines saying, look at this crowd. You know, it's like when you have 10,000, 20,000 people at some place, you always stop and say, look what's happening. And you take up every word that whoever's in charge is saying.
I agree. You know what hits me there, Dave? And the scriptures itself isn't clear, but there's a lot of other writings from historians around this time period that tells us that these fishermen that we're reading about, James and John and Peter and Andrew, these weren't some guys who had a little 16-foot boat out there trying to catch enough food to feed their families. These were well-to-do fishermen who owned many large ships who were catching large volumes of fish, feeding the entire community. These weren't just your common fishermen. These were what you and I would consider professional fishermen. Is that true?
Did you ever have St. Peter's fish?
No.
Wouldn't it be great if somebody could fly home with a whole boat full of St. Peter's fish?
Yeah. Well,
the day that you go on the boat ride across the Sea of Galilee, we stop in the middle and have a concert. Then when we get over on the side, we go to a restaurant and we eat St. Peter's fish.
Is that right?
Scrumptious. I mean, unbelievably good. And you walk away filled saying, man, I could come back here again tomorrow. And they're ushering us into the bus, and no way, we're rolling again. Old, we want to go back.
Now, wait a minute. You have to explain this. How do they connect that with St. Peter's fish? Is that just the name of the restaurant, or what are we talking about?
No,
here?
It's the fish that they catch. It's in the sea.
Oh, it's come from the same area where I got you.
You have to eat the fish the fishermen catch.
Right, the way fishermen can't
and
caught
so
it.
And so they don't go to America and fly and fish.
Yeah, right.
It's St. Peter's fish.
Now I got it. Okay, that's a fascinating story, Dave. Yeah, that's just an incredible. This time of year during the Christmas Advent season, as we stop and think of all the beauties that are associated with Christmas, now we can add fishing also to that list. It had to be an incredible beginning for Jesus, the birth, his childhood, and we talked about that and how he grew up in the church. He was very wise and intelligent man that he could he could communicate with these people when he was just 9, 10, 11, 12 years old. And he was learning. And now he begins his ministry. That, to me, is just a fascinating way to celebrate our Christmas season. David, I thank you for being here and sharing with our listeners. They, too, thank you for your knowledge, your years that you spend in the pulpit and traveling about this good old world we live in. Are really just very keen, and you so graciously share those words with us every week. I wanted you to know that on behalf of our listeners, I appreciate what you have done for us here at Cumberland Valley Christian Radio.
Are you a fisherman, Giff?
Nope, never caught a fish in my life.
I have to ask you questions
okay. All
the time to find out what kind of a man you are.
Yes.
But I bet you eat St. Peter's fish if it was brought here.
Oh my goodness, yes. I love seafood. That was a different question.
Why don't we send Jeremy out to get some St. Peter's
fish?
That's
a good idea, Jeremy. Would you go to Jerusalem for us? And Jeremy Ross is our engineer. If you, our listeners, are wondering why Dave and I can harass somebody else that you can't see or hear, well, he's our engineer here with us in the production studio, and he's a good soul who makes all these things magically happen for us.
I've enjoyed it,
Jeremy.
I've enjoyed it today.
We have to say goodbye for the day. Merry Christmas to all of our listeners. We thank you for tuning in to WPFG and listening to Giff and Dave on Two Guys with Heart. Bye-bye for now.
Couldn't be happier about it all. Dave Colonna here. I'm the chaplain of this great station, WPFG. Bye-bye. Merry Christmas.